there. This is the A Lot To Say podcast, a conversation-based project focused on unconventional career paths and the projects that consume us. I'm your host, Gary Williams, or Gaz, as many call me. And A Lot To Say is part of the Alt Projects family of content, obsessing about the overlap between creativity, technology, and culture. I'm fortunate to spend my days working alongside technologists, artists, researchers, and people who just generally give a damn about the world we live in. And I'm very lucky to be able to hear of some incredible career journeys over that time from some really inspiring people. So I am particularly energized by the projects that I hear people are experimenting and tinkering on along the way. And I thought, you know what, it's time to put these stories out there with the A Lot To Say podcast project. I can't wait for you to hopefully discover some new and lesser known stories about the things people get wrapped up in and what led them to this point. This is A Lot To Say. Hi, welcome to episode 14 of A Lot To Say with my guest, Oscar McMahon, the co-founder of Young Henrys. Oscar, he was schooled in Newtown, Sydney, and being more interested in skateboarding and guitar, he joined the band Hell City Glamours and spent 13 years touring Australia and the world making music, memories and not much money, as he puts it. For a bit over 6 years, he worked behind bars, crafting his skills and refining his tastes as a master mixologist, an amateur psychologist, a raconteur, confidant, and bon vivant. This led to meeting Richard Adamson and starting much-loved independent brewery Young Henrys together. How do I know Oscar? Like, I've been lucky to get to know him over the years. Honestly, he's one of the friendliest people going around, and Young Henrys is a brand that I'm a big fan of, let alone a beer brand. Oscar's co-founder Richard Adamson spoke on our Fuck Up Nights Melbourne event in 2019. And myself and the guys through that event and a few others have always just had a fairly friendly and casual way of collaborating and loosely partnering on initiatives for some time now. The aesthetic and ethos of Young Henrys probably just speaks to me, to be honest. I always had a laugh as to whenever my band would go to Sydney or I would go there myself, just stay in the most goddamn Melbourne part of it, and that being Newtown. So we went through plenty in this chat, and at the same time, not enough. We covered parenthood, collaborations with bands and brands that Young Henrys have done, such as the Foo Fighters, South Sydney Rabbitohs, Deus Ex Machina, and more. We chatted about the decision-making process in the business, community involvement and engagement in Newtown and beyond, caring about social issues such as sustainability and human rights, and plenty more. It was a great chat. So here it is, episode 14 of A Lot To Say with Oscar McMahon of Young Henrys. Thanks for joining. All right. Well, here we are for A Lot To Say podcast. My pleasure to have Oscar McMahon. Oscar, thanks for joining me, man.
It's lovely to see you, Gary. How are you, mate?
It's good. It's good. I do miss you. I became accustomed to, you know, seeing you quite regularly with my regular jaunts to Sydney throughout the last few years, and now we've been kept apart, I guess.
it's been heartbreaking. And another thing that we've been kept from is beer in a schooner glass. That has been a heartbreaking development.
Yeah, I know. Look, I kept it on the light hand side, but look, how are you going? It's been we're having this chat, which is, I guess, who knows what sort of timeline regarding sort of imposed isolation, etc. But how have you been going over the last few months, especially since you've been immersed in, I guess, some the industries that have been impacted not only hardest but earliest?
Yeah, look, I'm a pretty positive person, Gary, as you know, and I always try to see the good in things, and, you know, I know mentally that the only way out of a negative situation is through positivity. But man, it's been a hard fucking graft recently, dude.
I can imagine.
Look, I guess, you know, we're a beer company. We sell a lot to live music venues, to pubs, to bars and restaurants. And, you know, we got first hit by bushfires, you know, the hospitality and tourism industry got really affected over summer. You know, it was kind of the summer that no one had. Everyone, you know, we were down sort of 30% on what we should have been in summer. And, you know, as a beer company, you make all your money in summer. So that was a pretty rough trot. And then to come out of that and go into COVID, basically we had nothing in our bank account to start with, you know. And it was really heartbreaking for a while, mate. So many of my dear friends own restaurants, pubs, bars. And just to see people closing up shop, standing down all of their staff. I did a couple of phone calls with some friends and realized that in 1 week between Young Henry's and a few of my mates' restaurants, pubs and bars, we had had to stand down over 1,000 people.
Jesus.
In a week. And that was just people that I know personally. You know, so then we hit a real down point, and anyone listening to this will totally understand that, because every single person I think going through this has had their own real down moment. And things are starting to open up a little bit now. Things are starting to head in the right direction. But I think what is really interesting as a business owner, the way down was almost easier than the way back up. And the reason I say that is that on the way down, we knew where it was going. We were going towards no revenue. We were going towards zero. So we just had to cut costs.
Yeah.
It was just simple, drastic. You just pull costs, you switch it off, and, you know, and you deal with it. Coming back up,
swift decisions, right? Like, exactly. Sort of, you've got to make them. Whereas this is, I guess, the way up is sort of that sustained, no sort of end in sight.
Well, that's the thing, right? Is that to get back on your feet, you need your people. Your people need to work, and you need to pay them. We've got no money to pay them, but we need them to work to get to get the company back on its feet. So we're in this real interesting position of JobKeeper being an absolute lifesaver. You know, I don't think I have ever extolled the virtues of a Liberal Party decision ever in my life until JobKeeper came along. And look, while it's not perfect and it has not covered everybody, and we could go into that forever, I think from a really simplistic view, to our two businesses, you know, like obviously Young Henry's, but also the business I'm in with some other friends, the Unicorn Hotel. JobKeeper has been an absolute lifeline in us having the ability to keep some people on, to keep productivity happening without having to bear the full cost. And, you know, that it really is. When JobKeeper drops in, you know, 1st October, that's going to be a time to watch hospitality.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are going to be many industries that are going to have that rug pulled out from underneath them. And it's going to be very difficult to basically, if a business is not firing by that point, you're going to find it hard to stand on your own two feet once that security blanket's off, you know?
I mean, you've addressed some points that I was actually really curious to address with you immediately, which was certainly around, I guess, you know, from an external perception. During the start of this year, let's say within Australia, the bushfire times and I guess the response to it from the wider public, citizens and businesses, the creative industries, food and beverage operators, small businesses sort of leapt to action in terms of, I guess, some altruistic pursuits, you know, running fundraisers, contributing their time, their goods, their livelihoods. But then the ultimate irony is that with this sort of coronavirus time or isolation time, they were sort of the first to be put out of business and operation. And it's just, I guess, devastating. And more so that, I guess, in some elements, the government doesn't seem to, I guess, openly, verbally profess that the creative industries are as necessary as other, you know, other industries and scenarios. How do you sort of feel about the creative industry's role in sort of always coming out there to the fore to give? And then I guess the travesty of what's occurred over the last few months.
Look, it's a much better position to always be the person that does the right thing. And true leadership needs selflessness. And I think that the creative industries are always dependable on showing great leadership. You know, a creative person in a negative situation creates something beautiful to talk about pain or heartache, or, you know, beautiful paintings, sculptures, poems, artworks, you know, songs, symphonies have been written out of times of pain and suffering. I think that the creative mindset is always to see what is in front of you and interpret that and actually share it and get it out into the vernacular, actually start a conversation around it. So creative industries are always going to be at the forefront of, they are people who are passionate, they're people who are open-minded, and they are people who have a voice and generally a decent platform to communicate, and they do. So of course the government is always going to be trailing behind. There's no way that the government can act like the creative industries. It's really fucked that the creative industries dug so deep and did so much good during the bushfires, and, you know, created huge amounts of not just awareness but fundraising. And, you know, every single hospitality venue that we deal with, and we deal with around 1,000 different pubs, bars and restaurants, right? Every single one of them did something, whether it was donating tips or karma kegs. A friend of mine donated a motorcycle. Like, everyone was just people who don't have a lot and people whose businesses were being affected negatively by the lack of tourism. You know, they were giving everything that they had, you know, and then they come out of that, get hit with coronavirus, and, you know, no one had any fuel in the tank. It was kind of, it was insult to injury, but I believe in business karma, right? In that if your business does the right thing by, you know, by its people, by the world, by society, if your business does the right thing, people know that. People understand.
Yeah, they do.
It is, you know, you can spend whatever you want with a marketing agency and you will not get the same level of bedrock buy-in from the people who know and love your business than doing something truly cool, truly selfless, and, you know, doing something worldly, doing something where you actually prove that you give a fuck and you're not actually just thinking about your own profits, that you're thinking about, hey, you know what? I'm going to do something because this might be good for everyone or might be good for someone else. I honestly believe that those businesses will get supported because people will be loyal to those generous acts.
Let's talk about, I guess, businesses that people love and, I guess, you know, predominantly yours. I mean, Young Henry's incredible brewery. And for those who don't know, you know, based in Newtown in Sydney, and, I mean, you've been doing this for quite a few years and founded it with your business partner, Richard Adamson, love Rich. But your motto, I guess, which underpins a lot of it, is serve the people. And I think it's really nice when... obviously, people can get a bit more invested in brands and understand all those, you know, underlying stories and their intentions for being a brand and the things that they do in the local community and further. And what's always struck me is just, I guess, your direct correlation to, in particular, the music industry. So you're just immersed throughout all these live music venues, and you certainly, I guess, that plays a hand in, I guess, the music industry's prominence, particularly in Sydney and wider in Australia. How has, I guess, those parallels between Young Henry's and the music industry and further creative industries, I guess, manifested over the years from when you first began it?
Well, our motto, as you said, is serve the people, and it always has been, right? That's an old, it's an old sort of riff on a communist, an old communist. The idea of serve the people is understanding your community and reflecting its values. When we started Young Henry's, we also sort of wanted to create a company that we, as people, felt that we as owners and, you know, caretakers of this brand and this company, that our personal tastes and loves and values were actually reflected in the company. So that sort of communist saying leads to a mindset where we have always allowed our people to influence the brand and to actually have buy-in. And a lot of our people are ex-hospitality. They are a lot of musicians. Our logistics manager has won an ARIA, for fuck's sake. we've got a higgledy-piggledy mismatch of, you know, brewers, artists, musicians, very creative, very talented. It's a bunch of oddballs. It's not a cult, but it's not dissimilar, because there's a lot of love and there's a lot of positivity around what Young Henry's is. We care about sustainability. We care about the environment. We actually care about our products. We do things our own way, and we allow our brand to actually exist sort of like it is a person, in that our brand has a dress sense. Our brand has a soundtrack. You know, there are things that our brand likes and dislikes. We will stand up for the yes vote because our brand actually believes in that is a social issue. That is a human rights issue. We're not a political brand by any stretch, because, you know, people's right to marry or climate change, they should not be fucking political issues. They're social issues. They're human issues. And I guess that we've always stood up for the things that we believe in. I grew up, I had a misspent youth playing in a touring rock and roll band, which was fantastic, fun, hard. I was broke for 13 years, you know, the whole thing. It was great.
Hell City Glamours, wasn't it?
Yeah, Hell City Glamours.
Yeah.
A rock and roll band, which, you know, look, we recorded a few albums, one of which got released throughout Australia, Europe, and the UK. We did an American tour. You know, like, we played with some of our heroes, like Alice Cooper and, you know, like, Sebastian Bach, you know, Paul Stanley from Kiss, Nikki Sixx, you know, Tracy Guns when they did the Brides of Destruction thing, like, yeah, we did a few national tours with the Angels and Rose Tattoo and stuff like that. So it was a really, really fun time making no money, you know what I mean? What's really cool about playing in a band is you learn two things which actually set you up for business, and that is you have to learn to be creative in a group. Being in a business, you actually, that is a really important skill, especially a business that has a creative output, like making beers or designing posters, designing cans and t-shirts, you know what I mean? And you also need to make decisions based on what is best for your band, which if you think about it, a band is kind of like a brand, where you play, where you are seen, what you do and what you don't do is all important to the someone's perception of your brand or band, right? And
yeah.
So playing in a band, you never actually have the my experience in playing in a band was that we never had to make decisions based on financial outcomes. It was generally more about, do we like this? Will this be good for the band? Is this cool? It was very rare that, you know, we were never offered a large amount of money to do something that we felt uncomfortable about, if that makes sense. So
yeah,
learning to make decisions about what you feel is right, not what is going to affect the bottom line, is a really important skill to learn for when you get into business. Because if you get offered an opportunity, your first decision on whether to do it or whether not to do it should be brand focused. Is this right for the brand? Do I think this is cool? Do we think this is cool? How does everyone feel about it? Is this going to be good for Young Henrys, or is this going to detract from all the good work we've already done? If the answer is, hey, yeah, this is kind of cool, we're all kind of feeling good about this, we're interested in this, that's when you look at the financials. That's when you make the deal stack up and say, well, hang on, is this going to make us some money, or is this going to cost us a lot? Is, you know, do we have the capacity to do this properly? And that has always been a really interesting learning from playing in a band. And I guess that playing in a band was such a formative experience for me. You know, we started the band when we were 20, and I played in that band until I was 33. So I kind of grew up in a band, right? Became an adult playing in a band, which is not necessarily the healthiest thing. But throughout that time, I was also working in bars. And what I found amazing was that the network of people that I met through playing in a touring band and working behind a bar, all of a sudden, when you start a beer company, you've got an incredible foundation of people to start talking to about, you know, supporting bands when they go on tour, supporting live music venues, you know, getting your beer into other pubs and bars. And so live music has always been in the sort of DNA of Young Henrys, because Richard, the co-founder, he actually used to play in a band in the 90s called Blue Phoenix, which is
you're right.
They got signed, and it was nearly going to happen for them, and it didn't. I think was basically the vibe that he tells it, and you know, I know that feeling.
So
look, you know, music has always been in our personal DNA, and you know, when we built Young Henrys, we wanted to build a company that reflected our values and the things we love. And one of the things that we love is live music and the live music scene in Australia. And not only do we love it, but we feel that it's almost like we owe a debt of gratitude to the live music venues and the live music scene. And a lot of what we do in Young Henrys is not, a lot of the support that we do in the live music scene is not actually a revenue return for us. It's actually something that we feel that more businesses, more companies, more people need to talk about Australian music, because it is a fragile industry, as we are all seeing and learning right now.
Certainly.
You know, it's fucking beautiful. It's great. You know, we need live music venues. We need rehearsal rooms so that bands can play gigs and rehearse, so that they can get better, so that we have incredible music. We have incredible music in our country. We noticed in the early 2000s, when a whole bunch of live music venues shut in Sydney, all of a sudden it was harder to play gigs. So people in bands didn't get as good. So the quality of music really suffered in Sydney for a while. But then smaller venues started opening up. And see, that was the thing, right? There was a, I think there was about 500 capacity rooms that closed down. That is a really...
In the early 2000s?
Yeah, that's right. You know, places right. like the Excelsior and the Hopetown and the Sando and stuff like that. Now, that sort of capacity is a really important sized room for a music scene. That's where people who are coming up are cutting their teeth. They're getting an opening slot on a Wednesday night, you know, playing to 50 people. And you only know when a song is good or a song is shit by playing it in front of people, right?
I mean, me and one of our other guests, Callum Preston, on the podcast, chatting about, I guess, the formative influence of the Art House Hotel in Melbourne on us as we were growing up, but the fact that you could roll in there most nights of the week, and yeah, it was around that 100-person capacity room, and how important that was at the time, and how we probably didn't appreciate it, obviously, as much as until it was gone. But yeah, incredibly important for that capacity size.
It's like it's the breeding ground. It's, you know, it's really important, and also just from a romantic standpoint as well. You know, there's a couple of bands that I've seen in those small rooms that, you know, they go on to do huge things, and I'm sure everyone that sees live music has had those experiences. You know, seeing a truly incredible artist up close and personal, and then them going on to become, you know, everything that you'd always wished could have happened to you. You know, it's a, I don't know, there's something really special about that. It's like you, that feeling of early adoption, you know, you got to be in the room and, oh man.
Yeah, tell stories to people about the time you saw them at X when they, you were one of 10 in the room.
It's the dinner party story, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Hey, look, I totally agree with you. And I think, you know, just so you know, it's very much recognised, I guess, from my perspective. My perspective is that, you know, Young Henry's, I always have like quite almost a laugh to myself when I navigate to Newtown, whenever I'm sort of in Sydney, because it's just this Young Henry's sort of branding. It's a subliminal branding explosion, I'll say. The bands are roaming the streets. You're on every tap. Pop into the brewery, and you sort of are all around. But it's incredible, I guess, to see you immersed within that that community and neighbourhood so inherently. Everything from, you know, establishing the beer itself, Newtowner, through to just your wider involvement with a number of groups such as Newtown Festival, which unfortunately not happening this year, and a number of other things. So it's definitely recognised from externals as well. And just so cool to see, I guess, your legacy sort of extend from that local area, like outwards. But I will ask you a little later, so I guess I'll prepare you a little bit about how you feel about that concept of, I guess, a community versus an audience for brands, and what your sort of thoughts are on that. But why don't you tell us a little bit about starting Young Henry's with Rich? So you mentioned you're in hospitality after all coinciding with band involvement. What was the origins of it starting, and leaning into, I guess, what feels right? How do you make these decisions then in terms of what feels good for the Young Henry's brand?
Well, look, Young Henry started when I was working in a pub in a place called Glebe. I was working in this pub called the Roxbury Hotel, and I met this guy called Richard over the bar. He was a brewer, and we got chatting, and you know, a little while, like, you know, we started talking about music and stuff over the bar. I was just starting to get into craft beer, you know, like, as in more than your regular person was into craft beer at the time, I guess. And, you know, this is a time where it was very difficult to, you couldn't just walk into a pub and get an independently owned Australian craft beer on tap, you know, like, think about that.
Yeah.
Unless you could find a Little Creatures in Sydney, it was like maybe you'd find a tap of Cooper's, and that was kind of it. So Rich and I decided to start a beer club, and we basically started doing this word of mouth beer club, and people started turning up each month. You know, no Facebook, no Instagram, you know, oh, fuck, I don't think Instagram was even designed. What was even a thing back then, actually. But so we started this beer club, and through word of mouth, we got up to like 120 members, and people were just turning up to trial the different beers that we'd brought in because it was their only point of access to these different beers. And we kind of just started thinking like, man, there's something here, right? There's like, there was definitely this feeling of excitement towards beer. And one night after beer club, we were pretty drunk, and Rich turned and he said to me something like, you know what? We should make a beer company that is in touch with the drinkers like beer club is. And it was just, you know what? Fuck. Yeah, let's do that. We could do that. And that kind of became that one drunken conversation became the mission, right? I called him up the next day and I was like, hey, you know, look, you know, last night you were talking about making a beer company. Like, are you serious? He's like, yeah, why not? It's like, okay, well, fuck, let's do it. You know, I would have been a 28-year-old bartender who had no fucking idea of what would be involved or what toll it would take on my life. but we started catching up. You know, we started catching up, going to pubs and cafes and just sitting around working on this business idea, this business plan. And so we were working on this idea of this unnamed brewery. And Rich used to bring his 1-year-old son along to some of the meetings, you know. And one time we were sitting in a cafe and I said, oh, we should call it Young Henry's because Henry's the third shareholder. And we were like, oh, Young Henry's, all right, there's a bit of a ring to that actually. So we just put that down and it was Young Henry's was basically the working title of, you know, the project. And we had this idea of like, of course, eventually we'll change it once we work out something better. And we just never did. So we got we found a little site. It took us nearly 2 years to get a site and to get the money together. And there's a bunch of different, you know, shareholders. We got this little industrial park in Newtown, got two warehouses, started building a brewery. And I remember when the brewery was almost done, and I'd basically borrowed some money out of my parents' self-managed super fund, right? And I'd put my money into this company, and I woke up in the middle of the night thinking, how the fuck am I ever going to pay that back? You know, and it's like, in hindsight, I wish I'd have borrowed more, but yeah, it was just this really funny thing. We started Young Henry's with everything that we could beg, borrow, and steal literally was put into this company. We started making beers in early 2012, and we ran the business like a pirate ship for the first few years, man. It was it was fun. It was all gut feel. It was live bands playing in the brewery when we weren't allowed to. We had one guy who had me and Rich both had a ute, right? So we would send out one of our guys and he'd do rounds of pubs the night before the Lion Nathan keg pickup, and we'd pinch all of the old Tui's kegs and we'd wash them and like we'd clean them and refill them and then send them back to the pubs with our beer in them.
Just genuine rascal behavior. And I guess you started attracting the misfits and you know, the people you were looking for by the same token, right? Like 100%. Wanting to come and work for you, alongside you, collaborate, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and Young Henry's was this really fun, exciting brand. But look, it wasn't all just rock and roll and rat bags, you know. We also had a real mind for sustainability. And you know, our first vessels that we sold beer in, apart from kegs, were growlers, you know, reusable bottles. We wanted to reuse instead of recycle. A few years later when we went into packaged formats, we were one of the first companies to go into cans in Australia. And anyone listening now, they'll be like, oh, yeah, of course, yeah. Everyone drinks beer in cans. When we first went into cans, we couldn't sell them to people. Bottle shops, you know, like the big guys, independent bottle shops, they weren't having it. They were like, no, this is not a thing. It took a real long time before, you know, obviously, thank God, now the world has caught up. But it was really interesting, you know.
Let's talk really briefly, actually, on, I guess, the respective roles that yourself and Rich play then. I'd be really keen to hear your perspective. Maybe you weren't quite aware of it at that time, but in hindsight, I guess, what's because you both obviously play super important roles, and, you know, the business sustaining has been indicative of that. But what do you each bring to it, and, what do you attribute to, I guess, your perseverance in building that brand that people love?
Well, look, Richard has got a really great mind for brewing. He has got a degree in brewing from the Ballarat University. He's been brewing since he was 18 years old. He really understands what it is to build a beer recipe, to get the best out of ingredients and to create balance and harmony in a beer recipe. He makes really great sessionable beers. Richard is the brewing head. I think that my bit is more the brand, company values, and how a company can reflect the values and how a brand can be translated throughout its people, its merchandise, its products, and its point of sale, and also the events and marketing activations that it does. I think that's sort of my vibe. One of the other really important people in our business is Dan Hampton, and he's one of the early day investors as well. He's our sales director. He's my closest business partner. We share an office with our CEO, and Dan and I work together really closely day in, day out. He's the sales director, so he's thinking about what is our sales strategy. He also sits across marketing with me. I'm across marketing, brand, and I sit in on brewing as well. Rich sits on brewing, and our CEO sits across more of the financial aspect of the business. So you've got this really interesting intersection of different mindsets there, and if you can get all of those different viewpoints to agree on something, then generally you know that that's going to be right.
Look, let's talk about some of these projects, and mind you, we don't have these chats forever. We sort of, you know, we dive in for a bit of an overview of the projects that consume you, and I guess the path that you've taken. I mean, I know there's various other things, such as, you know, even being a model at one point, but you own this establishment in the Yun Corner Hotel in Paddington. You're doing the brewery. You bring these intangible elements to it. And you know, that would manifest in thousands and thousands of conversations over the years, which many of which would result in a bunch of collaborations. So, like, the ones I've seen, and there's plenty more. I mean, you know, you've got Foo Fighters, you've got South Sydney Rabbitohs, you're doing things for, you're creating your own music festivals, you've got Newtown Festival, you're on heavy metal festivals like Download, creating hemp IPAs with AFEMs and more. And then interestingly, then you're doing these other very socially minded projects. So Rich told me about the algae project that you're doing with University of Technology in Sydney. And I was just absolutely blown away, because I think it changes people's preconceived notions of what a small independent brewery is compared to the type of project and hypotheses that they're testing. Do you want to tell us about that algae project? Because it's just phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Look, our view is that a person is not one-dimensional, so a brand shouldn't be either. And I love rock and roll. I love music. I am an open-minded person, and I actually give a fuck about the world and, you know, the carbon footprint that we as a business create. So a little while ago, we were at a science event, Nerd, and we met some people from the University of Technology, and we met these people from the climate change cluster of the University of Technology, right?
Can I actually ask, were you there based on your previous community solar power project, the Pingala one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, right. So from there stemmed a bit of an interest in, I guess, some more STEM science involvement.
Exactly. We've for the listeners, we've got a community owned solar farm on our roof. So basically, a bunch of an organization called Pingala. We struck up an agreement, and a bunch of people in our local community invested into a solar farm that sits on our roof. So we basically buy our power from people from our local community, which is made by the sun, and we buy that power at a fixed rate of return. So people are actually making money on their investment. We're basically paying the same amount as we would be paying one of the big ugly electricity companies. And the sun makes our power, which is really cool.
That's awesome.
So
how did that lead into the algae project then?
Look, I guess through being the first business in Sydney to do a Pingala solar farm, we started getting invited to quite a few different climate change, climate change events, talks, etc. We met these people from the climate change cluster at UTS, like I was saying, and they are in the middle of studying algae. So algae is an amazing thing. And the project that we're doing, basically, it's a bit of a noodle scratcher, but, you know, hold on, it'll make sense. So beer yeast eats sugars from malted barley, basically wheezes out alcohol and farts out CO2. So the CO2 comes out of the vats and basically goes into the atmosphere. Algae eats CO2, turns that into oxygen and creates more algae. It photosynthesizes. So we have got this carbon capture system which captures the CO2 off one of our tanks. We feed it into a bioreactor full of algae. That creates the algae to photosynthesize. It makes oxygen, turning one of our, you know, carbon outputs into oxygen. Now, we've got two of these reactors in our brewery. Each one of them makes the equivalent amount of oxygen as a hectare of Australian bushland. Now, you think about how long it takes to grow a hectare of Australian bushland, and now think about the fact that we can grow up a tank of algae in under a month. So we are now making more oxygen out of these two little bioreactors than the footprint of our business. So what we're working on with UTS at the moment is a scalable industrial solution for breweries to actually capture all of the CO2 from their tanks, to use the CO2 that they need. Any excess gets fed through an algae canister, turned into oxygen, which actually could potentially make some breweries a net negative carbon business.
Incredible.
So this is a world first, and we're looking into we're going through the patenting process, and our idea is to create a scalable, replicatable model that we can share with people, brewers from all around the world. In fact, we could actually share it to any company that has fugitive carbon emissions. So this could even work in mining. There's this could really, you know, go across a whole bunch of different industries. So it's a pretty important project for us. we've spent a lot of money on it. I don't really know how we're going to make that money back, but it's one of those things. It's like business karma, like I was saying before.
Mm.
We really honestly think that our customers believe in our business, and I think that when people buy something, they are buying value. Now, that value might be a price point, or that value might be, I'm going to spend a little bit more money. I'm going to buy myself a keep cup for $30 because I don't want to keep using, takeaway cups. That's a value proposition. That's someone spending more money for them to drink their daily coffee because they actually care about something. We honestly think that while we'll never be able to see a direct return of investment, we think that doing something brave, doing something that actually cares about our emissions, but also is trying to change the emissions of our industry, we honestly believe that that creates a value that the people that drink our beer, that they will actually reinvest into, you know, their belief in our company because we're actually trying to do something.
Hmm. And do you think how do you go with the, I guess, the storytelling aspect of these new ventures from your perspective? You're very used to talking about new lines or, you know, working with the Foo Fighters as sort of an easy story to tell. And then you've got these new ones, which are community engagement projects. You're talking about climate change and other social factors. So how's that been as, I guess, a shift in the way you communicate the brand values?
Look, it's interesting. It takes on a different format, really, because if a brewery makes a beer, you know, we can talk about that on our socials. We can do a poster run. We can, you know, you could buy some advertising or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, no one from a newspaper or a magazine or an online blog, no one's really going to give a fuck and give you the time of day because, oh, you're a beer business, you're creating a product. Yeah, we expect that. What's interesting is that if you do something a little bit outside of the normal realm of what someone expects of a business in a certain industry, all of a sudden people actually start caring. You know, people from newspapers start calling up going, okay, we want to interview you. We want to interview you about your algae project. So all of a sudden we're in, you're getting brand messages out through a completely different sphere, and you're talking to a whole bunch of people that have probably never heard of Young Henry's before. They've probably never drunk a Young Henry's before. And you know what? If someone reads an article on sustainability or environmentalism because that is something that they're interested in, and that's the first way that they hear of Young Henry's, well, you know what? That's a really positive, that's as positive as positive a brand message as someone who goes to a DZ Death Rays gig because they love DZ Death Rays and they try Young Henry's for the first time. You know, it's all positive, man.
That's it. I think I just really love how you sort of, I guess, change up the like, it's basically you're shifting the perceptions of what your brand could be instead of the expectations of what an external group think it should be. And I just love that. I mean, we're going to end it now with one final thought from you. I know you've been producing a bunch of hand sanitizer lately as a response, and then also, congratulations on even winning prizes for gin. But I want to for your noble cut, Jim, I should say, I want to ask you just one last thought. What's scratching your itch for the future? I guess maybe with a bit of perspective of what's happened lately or where you think the brand might go.
Look, this huge economic downturn has forced us to really take a look under the hood of our business. And, you know, we've nearly been going for nearly 9 years now. And we've got a lot of bad habits, you know, as a business. And what's really exciting is that as we build up again get back to you know, our normal day to day, we're actually going to be shedding a bunch of those bad habits, and you know, we're going to be traveling less. We've made some real conscious decisions on how the business can be better for all of us. And you know, when I say all of us, I mean, you know, all of the crew that work here all the time. And I actually feel that we have a bit of a responsibility as business owners to try to run a healthier business. We've been so lucky to be achieving crazy growth over the last, you know, 8 years, that it's almost a time where we need to shift and be a little bit more responsible for building a sustainable business that is going to keep our people in jobs over the long term. And I know that that sounds really boring, but there's something really important about that. And I actually feel really positive about that. You know, we're focusing on building a better and stronger company so that, you know, things like COVID won't beat us up as much as it did, you know?
Mm. Look, we'll leave it there, man. But I honestly really appreciate your time once again. So for people who don't know, Young Henrys have been a long-time supporter of, you know, the Fuck Up Nights events I run. So, Oscar, I really appreciate it over the years. And look, all the very best, man. I can't wait to see you in person. But this is really exciting, and I can't wait to see where you end up next.
Mate, Gary, it's always a pleasure, bro. I owe you a beer.
Thanks, mate.
See you, mate. Bye.
So that was my chat with Oscar McMahon as part of A Lot to Say, with a focus on unconventional career paths and the projects that consume people. You can find Oscar on Instagram at Oscar_McMahon. And you can also follow Young Henrys across all the social media accounts at Young Henrys. So look, thanks for joining me. I'm Gaz Williams, and this has been A Lot to Say, episode 14. Music is by my band, Bateman. This track, Fangbanger, is on our EP, Ultraviolence. It's on Bandcamp, and this one was produced by Joby J. Ford of the Bronx, which Young Henrys have also collaborated with in the past. So bit of awesome relevance there. Follow A Lot to Say on the Alts Projects social media channels at Alts Projects. And thank you so much for joining. Have a great one. Cheers.